Thank you so much for coming out tonight. And there's just some echo. Some of these poems are going to echo some other poems we've heard in a way as if we had planned it. Psychic power, perhaps? Suburban LA house tour, 1956. That's the sofa. That's the sofa where my sister and I practiced standing on our heads. There, the pages left open to Chopin on the dusty upright piano where my mother tried to teach us, but we were stubborn and tone deaf. That I regret. On the bookcase, 36 volumes of Funk and Wagnall for the children and a raft of self-help books, which my mother read. 1956 was the year. 1956 was the year my father nearly packed his gray suits, socks, and slide rule for London and some British woman. Rooms half lit, Venetian blinds closed to the neighbors, and the beauty of azaleas. Only his father convinced him to stay. There's the backyard where my mother, where I found my mother crying and cursing at the clothesline, and the kitchen where she stood boiling chicken and potatoes. My mother was Italian and had no love for the tomato. Dad wasn't home for dinner anyway, working months at some Mojave missile site or maybe Kwajalein in the hallway, the Canaries. In my cluttered bedroom, small desk and chair, dictionary, blue, black blue wallpaper with little roses, my schoolwork and chicken scratch. I remember how, despite her travails, my mother defended me when my teachers complained of my failure to engage my thumb properly while holding a pencil, and all the times they chastised me for daydreaming and rolling my eyes. After my father left for the last time, my mother learned to cook Chinese. It wasn't half bad. Okay, on the, I'm gonna have to get rid of this, it's gonna work. Okay. Augury is a sign of what will happen. It's a portend. And this poem was written about seven months ago. And it is set in California, where Don and I live part of the year, so I can be near my family. On a day of augury, January 20th, 2017, we're making America great again. Our 650 square feet of Venice duplex, Mr. Don clears out and sweeps the garage. I take our dog Daisy to the vet. I vacuum. We don't watch the festivities, and we wouldn't even if we owned a television. Some describe the speech as Jacksonian, but don't we have Andrew Jackson to thank for the forced removal of the Cherokee Nation? Noxious whiff of Lindbergh's America First, bad sign. So are those eagles or vultures circling as the President of the United States? Tonight, a blend of orange juice and anything but Russian vodka. So this is a true story. And I want to thank Michael Sims, who is here tonight, for publishing this poem on Vox Populi, a public sphere for politics and poetry. You should look it up. You should subscribe. It's free. And it's free. It's free. And there's the word Juden means, of course, Jew. And that appears in the poem. Progress Street. For Halloween in 1960, I dressed as an election booth, festooned with Kennedy stickers and buttons. If you're a woman over 60 and someone says coat hanger, you don't just think laundry. All those folks who didn't vote thinking, no worries, they're awake now. Black paint on an old stone house, Juden, having that nightmare too. Take out your blue and red pens, mark the passages, fact in blue, opinion in red. Is that so hard? Maybe we all need a national civics course taught by someone we'll listen to? Volunteers? Tonight I'm meeting an old friend. We'll fortify our sorrow with coffee and home fries. Mullins Diner, North Side, 16th Street Bridge, left on Progress Street. If you're not watchful, you'll miss the turn. I have never been to Prague, but I'm fascinated with Prague and with the story of Václav Havel and the Velvet Revolution. And this is a poem that's gone through about 17 drafts. And this has been on Vox Populi. I've added a section that you have not heard. Okay. Dreaming of Prague. I can almost imagine the euphoria, those first days of revolution, the crowds at Wenceslas Square, even the police cheering Václav Havel riding a pedal scooter through the castle. Pinter came to dinner, the Dalai Lama, even the Rolling Stones. For Havel, the revolution meant no more sleeping late or drinking coffee with rum. Olga called the castle the submarine. Rummaging through my desk drawer, crayons, paintbrush, a box of Maalox, you always want to be where you are not. Like a lizard doing push-ups on a stone. I can't help myself. Havel was a small man, a shy man, with tiny hands who'd speak to the floor or to your shoulder. How did he know he wouldn't wake up before a secret tribunal or a firing squad? When I go to California, I take along some light reading, Kafka's Metamorphoses, Camus' The Plague. Then I go back to dreaming of Prague. Easy to be snide about a leather jacket hero, restless for power, the way Hobbes says we all are. But that doesn't account for Havel's 5 years in prison or his letters. I am not interested in why man commits evil. I want to know why he does good here and there, or thinks, or at least thinks he ought to. Now, this is the poem that appeared in after Happy Hour Review, and this is so strange because no one's ever seen this poem until I sent it to them. And I was going like, well, they're sure not going to take that. But I sent it anyway, so you've never heard this poem. On his dresser, matchbox, stray business cards, dictaphone, scribbled phone numbers, mementos. There was, Paul claimed, an order to it. Keys for his red Corvette that the fire the year before melted to a pretzel frame. Chunky gold wedding ring. The letter K as a flower unfurling with a diamond from his mother's ring, his mother born in Poland who died just before he graduated college. The miracle, contact lenses, essential after he nearly lost both retinas. Tortoise frames as backup with thick, smoky lenses. Driver's license, checkbooks, lapsed corporate ID, but also his weathered one from Justice, salvaged from the 70s as a keepsake. 3-ring leather binder with fancy stock on which he'd begun to sketch some poetry. As mighty eagles soar their talons, June 1994, plane ticket, his last flight home from Chicago, where rail thin he lied, even to his friends, preventive chemo. His voice preserved on dictaphone. When bad things happen to good people, the Bhagavad Gita, the book of Job. And then one more poem, and then you get to, and then we take a break. And this is a poem. I grew up in Los Angeles at a time when Los Angeles was very conservative. I mean, if you mentioned the word communist, people's head would just burst into flames. I had first-person experience with this. And so this is, oddly enough, years later, I really started thinking about Dorothy Healy, who lived and died pretty much the same years as my mother, and had a very sort of different life trajectory because of how they'd been raised. But I thought about what her vision was, which was not to collude with any foreign nation, but rather, I think, for an ideal of social justice that now we kind of take as a given for how we might proceed in the world. So here, at least some of us do. So here's a poem for Dorothy Healy. And the poem is, "Dear Communist, Dear American." And there's a reference to Gus Hall, who was the head of the Communist Party in the US. "Dear Ms. Ebullient, dear Ms. Unstoppable, dear Red Queen of Los Angeles, dear Dorothy born Rosenblum, red diaper baby, did you really read Upton Sinclair at 12, join the party at 14, give a prom night to get arrested for vagrancy and disturbing the peace, that is, for passing out the daily worker on Oakland Skid Row and making a speech? Dear Ms. Boogeyman, why drop out to work with migrants in San Jose canneries, pitting peaches and organizing a strike for years after you couldn't stomach a fruit pie? Dear 90 pounds of dynamite, dear big-hearted and buxom, your life a blur of organizing and strikes, speeches and stir time, dear Ms. Unflappable, who trade food stamps for smokes and catch up on your reading in jail, dear Dorothy, did you see your file? Did you know that the FBI described you as loyal, fair-minded, and charming? Did you know? Think how you'd look in that 1949 jailhouse photo, subversively beguiling. Dear Ms. Anachronism, Ms. Historical Artifact, who stood up to shotguns and prosecutors, strike breakers and loyal Americans. Dear Ms. Fearless, who after the Prague Spring denounced the Soviets, stood up to apparatchiks, told Gus Hall to shove it. Dear Miss Forget-Me-Not, Miss Formidable, what was it like all those years speaking into that KPFK radio microphone in LA, still smoking cigarillos, arguing for feminism, for peace and justice, denouncing capitalism, your voice firm, your enunciation flinty, your hard one breath barely enough to finish the sentences. Thank you.